Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Nearly a year after the pandemic began, more than 500,000 people have now died in the U.S. from COVID-19. And manufacturers were prepared for a recession, but now they can't keep up with orders.
What they didn't see is that there would be this huge upturn in demands quickly, and that's what sort of caught everybody off guard.
Plus, how millions of hospitality workers are launching new careers. It's Monday, February 22nd. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. The U.S. death toll from COVID-19 has now surpassed 500,000 people, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. President Biden is expected to hold a ceremony this evening to honor those who have died, including a moment of silence and a candle lighting at sundown. In a statement this afternoon, Biden ordered flags to be flown at half staff at federal buildings. The death toll has grown nearly exponentially. The first 100,000 U.S. fatalities were reported in May. It took roughly 4 months to reach 200,000 confirmed deaths and another 2.5 months to reach 300,000. The worst of the surge came in January and February. Each month saw 100,000 additional deaths. Despite the enormous death toll due to the virus, COVID-19 cases have been declining rapidly since early January. Hospitalizations due to the disease fell to 56,159 on Sunday, down more than 53% from a month earlier, according to the COVID Tracking Project. And that's led to the lifting of more restrictions. Today, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that movie theaters in New York City would be allowed to reopen at 25% capacity next month, after being closed for nearly a year. New data from the UK shows just a single dose of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine can reduce infections by more than half. England's Public Health Agency released the study, which looked at infections in people 80 and older, and showed a reduction of 88% after the second shot. According to the study, the vaccine has also reduced hospitalizations and deaths. Today, the UK outlined a plan to begin lifting lockdown restrictions next month. Schools will start reopening on March 8th, and most other restrictions are expected to be lifted by the end of June. At his nomination hearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee today, Judge Merrick Garland said his first priority as Attorney General would be investigating the January 6th riot at the Capitol. Garland promised to combat domestic extremism here in the U.S. Garland was nominated by former President Obama to fill Justice Antonin Scalia's seat on the Supreme Court, but was never given a Senate hearing. Today, he was asked why he was seeking the position of Attorney General. In emotional testimony, he recounted how his grandparents had come to the U.S. fleeing anti-Semitism.
And I feel an obligation to the country to pay back. And this is the highest, best use of my own set of skills to pay back.
Meanwhile, President Biden's pick to lead the White House Budget Office is facing more opposition. As head of the Center for American Progress, a center-left think tank, Neera Tanden made statements and wrote tweets criticizing Republicans. Now, Senators Susan Collins and Mitt Romney, both considered swing votes, say they'll oppose her nomination. Last week, West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin said he'd vote against her as well. With the Senate split between the parties, the White House will now need to look for a moderate Republican senator to support her. And the Supreme Court has denied efforts by former President Donald Trump to block New York prosecutors from accessing his tax returns and other financial records. Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance is investigating the Trump Organization for potential insurance and bank fraud. Separately, the court rejected Trump's efforts to throw out ballots in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. President Biden won both states in the November election. Coming up after the break, why the manufacturing industry is struggling to keep up with demand.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Back order. If you've done any shopping for the past year, you've probably read or heard that word more than once. Everything from barbells to kitchen mixers to cars has been sold out. In the beginning of the pandemic, there were supply chain issues because factories around the world were closed to prevent the spread of the virus. But they've been open for months, and the industry is still struggling to keep up. That's because of something known as the bullwhip. Joining me now to explain what that is Wall Street Journal manufacturing reporter Bob Tita. Hi, Bob. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So, Bob, nearly a year ago, U.S. manufacturers had to quickly shut down in response to the pandemic. Many of them anticipated that there was going to be a recession, and they resorted to a tried and true playbook that they've used in the past. But things were different this time around. What happened?
So companies typically cut production, cut expenses, quit buying things because you're reacting to lower demand, lower orders from your own customers. And in this case, demand went down so heavily, so severely in April that most companies anticipated that this would take months and months to recover. What they didn't see is that there would be this huge upturn in demand so quickly. And that's what sort of caught everybody off guard by the summer, that many of these, you know, industries where demand just cratered in the spring were just surging, and it caught many companies off guard because they had stopped buying, they had furloughed workers, they didn't have much inventory on hand, and so it was really a struggle. It was something they hadn't really seen before. Typically, we have a slower recovery after these sorts of drop-offs.
So demand really went up for all kinds of consumer products like cars, appliances, furniture, and power tools. Bob, how has that presented challenges now for U.S. manufacturers as they're trying to recover from the pandemic?
Well, what you typically have when there's a demand in the end market, that ripples along the whole supply line, the whole supply chain, and suppliers start to order more, and the guy in back of them starts to order more on top of that. And you have what's kind of known as a bullwhip effect. So you might have a 10% increase at the end customer level, but at the back of the supply chain, the guy at the back is increasing his production by 50% because everybody is ordering more and more and more and more. So you have a sort of exaggerated effect of demand that gets carried through the supply chain.
You also spoke to some economists who say that years of what the industry was sort of going through in terms of making factories more efficient by making them smaller and cheaper actually left them in a tougher position when the pandemic came.
Right. Well, when you have, a smaller operation, and many companies have downsized over the years, and you get hit with a deluge of orders, it's hard to sort of really accommodate them when you've basically leaned out your own production facilities. And what's made it even more difficult is that many companies have outsourced operations to other third-party companies, suppliers that have done the same thing. So they've made their own operations smaller and relied more on outsourcing of operations and so forth. So if you just kind of keep doing this and everybody keeps doing this, you have a sort of supply chain that has a harder time really accelerating production all at once to meet a big demand.
Of the companies you spoke with, were any able to find solutions to this? What's the expectation for the next couple of months? How are they coping?
Many companies are adding people. They're adding more shifts. They're trying to get more production out of their plants. They're doing everything they can to ramp up production. In many cases, they're offering people higher wages so they can hire people. I think you're going to see elevated activity from manufacturing, demand for durable goods persist probably through at least the first half of the year.
And Bob, what about U.S. consumers? We've heard a lot about the long waits for some of these in-demand items. You mentioned exercise equipment. That comes to mind. Any other impacts here that we're seeing on consumer behavior?
Well, I think there's still a lot of demand for these sorts of things that people can buy for their homes, things that they, you know, might not have spent money on before, but are now because they can't spend money on entertainment or other things that have been affected by the pandemic. the risk, if you're a company that supplies these sorts of items, that they become so difficult to obtain that people just quit buying them. But we haven't seen that yet. The other big risk is that at some point people will stop buying them as we start to sort of normalize, and then you run the risk of having oversupplies in industries or a glut of things. You know, at some point we may have too much exercise equipment because everybody is ordering and ordering and ordering. And at some point all that arrives and, you know, the demand may not be there at that point.
Wall Street Journal manufacturing reporter Bob Tita. Bob, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
And finally, we've talked about how the hospitality sector has been hit hard during the pandemic. Over the past year, nearly 4 million workers at American hotels, restaurants, and bars have lost their jobs. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, about 1 out of 6 of those workers were still unemployed as of January, more than any other industry. And our reporter Catherine Dill says many who have found jobs have done so by using their old skills in new fields.
You can see where you would take the skills from, a consumer-facing high-pressure role in, say, a restaurant and transition them to something like customer service or something where you're dealing with a high volume of members of the public every day. And others have reskilled for entirely new careers. You know, we saw a few folks who worked in, for example, conference sales, worked at tourism boards, who have done online programs to reskill for software sales and some of these functions where companies are really hiring at scale. And we talked to lots of employers who said that they love hiring from hospitality because the workers are used to dealing with lots of folks in stressful situations, and they're used to doing it quickly and with a smile. And that's something that's useful in any industry.
And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.